you're young in your career, right? That's okay. You're learning, you're developing. That's how we build the next stage of leaders, right, in our organization, right? It can't just be about the successes. You have to be comfortable with fail part of it. You cannot escape it. And so from that standpoint, embrace it, run with it, and learn from the opportunity.
Hello, and welcome to Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, risk, and wherever else the waves take us. This episode is brought to you by Workiva, the one platform that unites the financial reporting, ESG, audit, and risk teams in your life, like Lucky Charms cereal brings together red hearts, yellow moons, orange stars, green clovers, and blue diamonds. I think there's horseshoes. There's a lot of stuff that's been added since I was a kid. My name is Catherine Tsai, professional asker of questions and lover of venti soy chai lattes. I'm looking forward to debiting a great conversation, and I'm happy to have you with us. I'm also happy to have Steve Soter joining me. Steve, please tell everyone about yourself.
Yeah, thank you, Catherine. My name is Steve Soter, accounting enthusiast and Diet Coke aficionado, and I am really looking forward to this discussion.
Yes, this week we are continuing our series that we recorded in front of the New York Stock Exchange as part of Workiva's celebration of 10 years since going public. Today's guest is Chris Pettit, the Vice President of External Reporting for Keurig Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Catherine. Now, well, this is Chris's first episode that he's joining for Off the Books. Chris has been a longtime Workiva customer and member of the SEC Professionals Group, and because of that tenure, he shares some terrific advice for other leaders, how to manage up, his work with the SEC Pro Group, and so much more.
Let's get to our chat with Chris.
Well, one of the things we've been talking about with all of our guests is leadership and what is a pretty dynamic an ever-changing landscape. I'm wondering, how do you think about leadership today than maybe the way you thought of it 5 or 10 years ago?
You know, I would say, gosh, now as I've gotten older and a little bit more comfortable in my skin effectively, right? You know, leadership to me is, you know, kind of leading by example, right? The one thing I'll tell you is when 5 years ago, I felt like I had to be the sage on the stage. I felt like I had to know all the answers. I felt like I had to bring that A game, you know, all the time. If I didn't know it, you know, do whatever I needed to do to gather that knowledge and have a perspective. As I've gotten older, leadership to me is lead by example, listen, provide feedback and a perspective, but, you know, step out of the way a bit, right? Let the team, right, come in with a perspective. Here's the work that we've done. Here's how we've thought of things, right? Let them have their opportunity.
Do you think was that age experience for you or like a societal change of like increasing vulnerability in leadership?
I think it comes with age a bit, right? I think for me, it probably was the amount of responsibility I had and really recognizing that I couldn't be in all the things, you know, the level that I wanted to be.
Sure.
Right? I had to pull myself out of the equation. I had to lift myself up, right, and let those that are closer to the issue, closer to whatever was going on, to handle it, let them come whenever they need assistance, when they need, you know, there's a blocker. Help me move the blocker so I can keep this moving,
yeah.
Right? You know, empowering my people to make those decisions without me, right? And so I really do think it was kind of an age thing for me, right? Just coming to that realization.
How did listening play a big part in that switch for you?
Oh my God, that was probably the hardest part, to be honest. You know, for those that have known me for a long period of time, you know, I'm happy to wax poetically about almost anything these days. And I know, really. And so it was intentional. I had to be very thoughtful about it. And at first, it very much was a count to five before you talk. I mean, really stepping back and being thoughtful about giving people, you know, the space to be able to say what they need to say. Having uncomfortable silence when I ask a question for them to, you know, really think about it, right? Have some thought, give it some consideration. So it was probably the hardest thing for me to learn.
What do you get out of it then when you found that you were able to let people fill those uncomfortable silences?
I was able to focus on the things that needed to be focused on differently. I could really look at it overarching across the entire scope of my responsibility, right? And, you know, I was relieved, frankly, right, that you recognize that you've got a great team in place and they've got the ball. They've got it under control. And it really was just kind of letting go and letting them have that opportunity to do it.
I know one area in which you've been a leader is in the SEC Professionals Group. I understand you helped launch a chapter. Is that right?
I think I've launched two chapters.
All right.
Yeah, officially, I believe it's two chapters. Well, Chris, what did that mean to you over the course of your career? And I would say for our listeners, that's how you and I originally got acquainted years ago, so the SEC Pro Group. Of course, you were very active in Texas, me in Salt Lake City. I actually looked up to you quite a bit, actually, as a chapter leader, as a way to engage chapters. I remember that frequently you would initiate surveys, for example, to collect really, really useful and fascinating data from the members. But let's tie together our conversation just now about leadership and maybe the SEC Pro Group. What is that network, what is that community meant to you over the course of your career? And maybe not just the SEC Pro Group. I know you're involved in other communities and,
sure.
And networks as well.
You know, networking is a really important component of the profession, right? I mean, anyone that's in the accounting profession, when you step back and you look at it, it is, to me, one leg of a three-legged stool, right? If I'm trying to stay on top of issues, stay on top of things that are going on, you know, talk about new pieces of GAAP, ESG, right? Knowing what your peers are going through, knowing some of the obstacles they may be encountering, it gives you, you know, a line of sight to things that maybe you wouldn't have seen otherwise. Listening to what they're going through. There's that listening again. Oh, my goodness, I said it again. But hearing it from their perspective, you know, really provides actionable data if you really step back and you think about it. And so if you're not networking, you know, if you're not going to some group to kind of be engaged, I think you're missing out, really, honestly. And so to me, it was very important to build that community. You know, I've been in my role with varying levels of different responsibility for almost 15 years, right? And there's a number of those contacts I still reach out to get a perspective, to get an opinion, right? What are you encountering? And so it's very valuable, right? So I go back to, if you're not doing it, you're missing out. There's an opportunity there.
That's one of the questions we've been asking people, too, is over time, how has your personal board of directors, if you will, changed over time?
I would say not dramatically different. I've been really fortunate in my career to be at a number of stops for a long period of time. And the people that I've had the pleasure of working with also didn't have a whole dramatic change of jobs, you know, other companies. And so from that standpoint, it's a lot of the same people that I interact day in, day out for the last 15 years. We're all grayer, but, you know, it's relatively stayed the same. And honestly, you know, I'm really fortunate for that. I had some struggles in the last year, and if it wasn't for some of those really long-standing relationships, I don't know if I would have gotten through some of the medical stuff I'd gone through recently. So I think for me, it was super helpful in that regard from, you know, kind of that standing board of directors, if you will, group. I mean, it really hasn't changed.
You must trust them.
Oh, trust is key. Trust is huge. But again, I go back to, but all of them are great people. And absolutely.
Is that something you wouldn't out of your way to cultivate throughout your career? Is that like sounding board of directors, or did that kind of occur naturally?
I think it occurred naturally, but I think it was also my personality, right?
Yeah.
Like I really want to interact with people. That's my go-to. Like,
sure.
I don't want to be in a cube just pounding away on a keyboard. Like, I really want to get up and interact with people. I think that's where, you know, you really kind of have an opportunity to build something. I mean, some of my most enjoyable opportunities is getting into, you know, a 2 or 3 hour debate on accounting issues at a whiteboard with
now
some
you're
of these
talking.
Guys. I know,
now
I know.
You're talking.
And you know, and that, you know, some of the best conversations sometimes have come out of those debates, if
sure.
you will, right? And the trust that comes with that, right? Because you know, like, hey, we're trying to get to the best answer. We're really trying to focus it. Like, yeah, we can get into the minutiae, but we really are trying to get to the same place. And it's funny, I have one individual that I'm thinking about specifically where people would sit there and walk by the room where we're having it, and they'd think we're in a knockout, drag-out fight, and it was just our personality,
yeah.
right? That's just the way we were wired.
Well, you talk about being in a cube. Some of our listeners may go for months or even years at a time without seeing a cube, with so many people still working at home. Given kind of your desire to interact with people, and I realize that you know, coming out of COVID, hybrid and various relationships or working arrangements, rather, are different across companies. What strategies did you use to stay connected and to interact with people? And what advice would you share to those people who may still be at home but are still craving that kind of cube conversation or water cooler conversation, as they say?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I will tell you during COVID for me that was really important was if I was having, you know, a team meeting or a one-on-one via WebEx or, you know, some other provider, don't jump right into the meeting, right? Almost said a naughty word, but shoot the stuff, you know, at the beginning, right? Take the time and connect,
yeah.
right? It's really important when you're not having those interactions that you have to reserve the time,
for sure.
right? And I know some people will sit here and say, well, that's not really super efficient. But when you're trying to build a high-performing team, having that well to draw from effectively, you know, you're still making deposits in it, right?
Yeah.
If you didn't make those deposits, right, you'd be looking up 2 years after COVID and you'd be like, seriously, you know, there's no water in that well.
Right.
Right. And so that to me was super important. And even on the, you know, the hybrid days, right, one of my hybrid days I use for all my one-on-ones, right? And so I'm doing it via, you know, Microsoft Teams. Hopefully that's okay to drop Microsoft Teams.
That's all right.
But, you know, so part of those conversations is absolutely spending a little bit of time, checking in, seeing how you're doing personally, not worrying about the work piece of it, right? Connecting as people.
Right. Because connection and efficiency aren't like, human connection is not about efficiency. And yeah, I think especially in remote or hybrid, you have to remember your teammates are human. And the more like, chit chat, how's everything going? What did you do this weekend? I think it builds more trust. And so if somebody like comes off feisty via Slack or whatever, you're not going to be like, you're like, no, I know it's Chris. He's going through something. Not like, well, this guy's a bleep. Like,
no, absolutely. It gives you, you know, effectively a little bit of cover, if you will.
For sure.
Right.
Does that advice still work for the C-suite? Like if you have a meeting with the CFO, is it okay to shoot the breeze a little bit with them too?
I think you have to read the room. Each occasion is different.
Okay.
Right. And so, you know, and you kind of take the lead from them, right? If they're feeling rushed, if they're feeling like, you know, they need an answer, right? Back off, give them the answer, and call it a day. If, you know, they initiate the shooting of the stuff, right? Then by all means, take advantage of it and go with that. But, you know, I don't want to ever be found to be ignoring the room, right? I want to make sure that I'm being thoughtful of their time, and if they're offering it up, taking advantage of it. If they're not, you know, understanding that as well.
A fancy accounting and finance honcho like you shouldn't be wasting time chasing data or copying and pasting numbers. No, use your fancy degree the way your parents always hoped you would. Workiva can help. Whether you're prepping or auditing annual reports or quarterly board presentations, you can use the Workiva platform to automate risky manual processes. Accelerate how you collect, report, and audit financial and non-financial data without sacrificing accuracy, so you can stand behind your story every time. Learn more at workiva.com/accounting.
Or workiva.com/risk.
Or workiva.com/ESG.
Well, let's go there if you don't mind, and we're skipping ahead just a little bit, but let's talk about that interaction with the C-suite. You know, what advice would you share to maybe younger financial reporting or accounting and finance professionals who are finding themselves starting to kind of have, let's call it a limited seat at the table, starting to have a little bit of exposure to that dialogue? What advice would you share with them where, on the one hand, they might be worried about disclosure and accounting compliance, all of which is important, and the C-suite absolutely should care about it, but they may also be concerned about optics and economics and those kinds of things. What is it like to read the room? What advice would you share to help them be successful in that regard?
That's an interesting one, to be honest with you, Steve. When I think about reading the room, you know, it really is reading the cues, right? It's body language. It's, you know, are they getting flustered with a particular path that you're going down from a disclosure standpoint, right? It's all those different things, going in. But what I would tell younger folks, first off, is don't be afraid to do it, okay? Like, jump in. If you're getting the opportunity to sit at that table, right, you've earned something, okay? Wear it. You've earned your stripe. Now wear it, okay? Secondly, know that, for in my case, I've got your back. I'm in the room, right? If it's a C-suite level person, I'm not going to let you go by yourself, right? I'm not going to put you out there without a net, okay?
Meaning you as their boss or their manager,
right,
in that case.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. And so from that standpoint, you know, to me, if you're going to fail, it's a safe place to fail, right? But a lot of folks, right, younger in their career, are uncomfortable failing in that environment, right? They see me coming in and jumping in if I need to as, you know, it looks bad on me. It's a bad optic, right? It's okay. It's okay. You're young in your career, right? That's okay. You're learning. You're developing. That's how we build the next stage of leaders, right, in our organization, right? It can't just be about the successes. You have to be comfortable with the fail part of it. You cannot escape it. And so from that standpoint, embrace it, run with it, and learn from the opportunity.
Which really speaks to, I think, your earlier advice about, hey, enable your team, remove the obstacles, but trust them. You know, put them in that, right? Put them in that position where maybe they can fail, but be there to, you know, be the safety net, to have their back, as it were.
And I'll tell you, I mean, as I've aged, right, would I have offered that opportunity to have that seat at the table with a C-suite individual 7 years ago? Maybe not, right? Maybe I wanted that opportunity. Maybe I didn't want to share, okay? But as I've gotten older and I'm thinking about things like succession planning and building that next stage of leaders in my organization, that becomes a real thing. They need to know how to operate in that environment and have comfort to operate in that environment.
What are you looking for in your next leader?
So it's kind of funny. I'm gonna segue that just a little bit.
I love it.
And turn that question more into what am I looking for in the next group of accounting professionals, okay? And the reason why I say that is my oldest daughter is about to graduate with an accounting major here this year. In fact, Madison, when you hear this video, you should feel like I'm talking directly to you because you've heard this before. So from that standpoint, right, I will sit here and tell you it's really important to be curious, okay? And I think this is true of a leader. I think it's true of the accounting profession. If you're not curious, if you're not asking the next level question, right, you're not going to develop yourself, right? You're not going to turn in to that next leader, right? I think that's a very important aspect. Don't just accept the status quo. If you don't understand it, don't be afraid to ask, right? You have to put yourself out there and ask the question. You know, I mentioned earlier about fear of failure, right? You can't be afraid to fail. you will fail. It's 100% a true statement. Steve has failed, so I know it's true. Everybody fails.
Many, many times.
And the best learnings come from failure, right? You have to embrace that mentality. Leaders absolutely have to accept that and operate in that space, right? And the people that are coming up in the next level of the profession, the quicker they figure that out, the faster they will progress in their career, right? They'll get it. They'll understand it. They'll learn. A continuous improvement mindset, okay? You know, going in and recognizing that things do not stay status quo, right? We live in a dynamic environment, right? We work in a dynamic environment. Things change, right? So you always have to go in and look at process, technology, right? The way you've got your organization designed, right? Because at the end of the day, you have to continuously look for tweaking opportunities where you can improve process, take risk out, risk of error, all those types of things. And so if you don't come in with a continuous improvement mindset, which, by the way, when I talk about empowerment, that is a really great area to learn, you know, in, right? Because, you know, if you step back and you think about it, when I think about continuous improvement, I'm talking about taking maybe a single process, right? And I'm really saying, hey, I'm going to go change these five aspects of the process. This isn't a financial transformation. This is a small, you might get involved with maybe two other business partners, kind of, I mean, it's very controlled, but you can focus on things like communication, change management, right? Working on transparency. I mean, all the things that you hear about when you think about big holistic changes, right? Big system implementations, right? Big org redesigns. That's a great place to practice those skills, right? And really develop them and hone them. So when you have a seat at the table for that big project, that big financial transformation, you've got some practice, right? You've got some stuff that you can pull from when you're dealing with real issues that will, you know, probably cross a lot of different groups within the organization.
Speaking of change, what are some of the big changes that you're managing right now?
My own. So we just went through a reorg at our company, and so expanded responsibilities. So, you know, trying to fill in the gaps where maybe I haven't had a lot of exposure in my career. And so I'm learning a lot of new things, and, you know, I embrace it. I want to learn as much as I can because, you know, at the end of the day, as long as you're a avid learner and you continue to be a sponge and absorb that information, right, you're growing in your career, and that's a great thing. And that doesn't stop at 25 when you come out of college. I know it's probably a little younger than that, but at 25.
Some of us 25.
Okay, some of us 25. And or even later in your career, right? So I think, it, you know, as long as you're learning, right, you're still very active in the profession in that regard.
Chris, thank you so much for spending some of your afternoon with us. For our closing question, changing completely what we've been talking about, we're in New York City. Do you have a recommendation of, like, best, you, Texas, I don't know, best barbecue? Where do you eat? Where do you think everybody needs to check out when they're in New York?
Oh, boy. In New York?
Or we could just say in Texas. Where do you have to eat if you're visiting Texas?
You know, I'll tell you, maybe I can turn this into a plug for some free barbecue, but Hutchins Barbecue in Collin County is a great place to go. It's ranked up there.
Nice.
But, you know, unfortunately, when you're talking about barbecue, a lot of the Hill Country barbecue joints get a lot of love.
Sure.
You know, Lockhart, you know, kind of region, just, you know, a little bit south of Austin. But if you're ever in DFW, Hutchins Barbecue is a great way to go.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that, and thank you for everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Chris Petta, thanks so much for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you again to Chris Petta, and thank you, dear listener, for surfing along with us. I'm Catherine Tsai. You heard Steve Soder and Mike Gravano, and this has been Off the Books presented by Workiva. We'll be back next week to conclude our New York Stock Exchange mini-series with Stacy Gilbert, Chief Accounting Officer at KeyBank.
That's exactly right. Now, please subscribe, leave a review, and by golly, tell your buddies if you like the show. Now, if you're watching this on YouTube, please leave us a note in the comments. We would love to hear from you, or feel free to drop us a line at offthebooks@workiva.com. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.